Welcome to the CDI CTO podcast presented by CDI Studios.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of the CDI CTO podcast. My name is Will Huber. I'm the CTO at CDI. And today I'm joined by our Chief Operating Officer, Vince Collado. Vince,
hey, welcome. Everybody. Yeah, how you thanks. Doing? Good. I'm excited to be here at the CDI studio.
Yeah,
my first shoot on the CDI studio.
Pretty cool setup we have here.
Yeah, it is pretty cool.
So, Vince, I want to spend some time talking to you about your background, first and foremost, and then maybe get into a little bit about what it is that you do at CDI. You do a lot of things at CDI. I jokingly say I feel like you've had every job here. Which puts you in a good position to do what you're doing now. And then just sort of talk about, our own sort of digital transformation and a lot of the change that we've enacted on in the past couple of years with you in that role. So we have this thing on the podcast where we have our guests sort of tell us their origin stories. So you can take that as far back as you'd like.
Okay.
But I'm curious,
back to the beginning, like when my butler built the cave underneath my mansion.
Yes.
With Alfred.
Yeah. if you could maybe talk to us about the early days of your career, how you sort of got started and leading up to the point of where you are today.
Sure. Yeah. So I started my career actually as a software developer. We've talked about that.
Yep.
And, did that for several years and, eventually got into infrastructure consulting, doing actually backup software, data protection software for a company called SyncSort, up in North Jersey in Woodcliff Lake, New Jersey. That's where I met a lot of guys I still work with and respect today.
SyncSort guys at CDI,
yep. when I was there, I was doing really SA work, pre-sales work, and I was doing scoping and a little bit of the service delivery as well, but mostly pre-sales. And at the time, I remember going on some sales call with some guy in Texas. We went down, and I'm watching him do his presentation, his pitch on the product. And he does this pitch and then he leaves and he goes away and he comes back and he buys a lunch and he leaves again. And I stay there all day doing POC with the customer. I'm in their data center. I'm overcoming all kinds of obstacles with tape libraries and other nonsense. And then we fly back and all I could think about on the ride back was, wow, man, that guy's presentation kind of sucked. Like, I think I could do a better job. So a couple of weeks later, I approached the national sales manager and said, hey, I'd like to try sales. And he goes, well, you're going to work hard. I'm like, that's all I do is work hard. Yeah, of course I'm going to work hard. And so he gave me a shot and he sort of chopped me down, brought me right back down to the beginning. Was like, you gotta start from the foundation. Like, forget everything you know. We're going to start over, teach you, a whole new craft of how to be a salesperson. And he did. And it was hard in the beginning for sure. But, I picked it up, obviously, did well with it. And that's eventually moved on to EMC.
Yep.
At the time before the Dell acquisition, well before the Dell acquisition.
A couple EMCers at CDI too.
Yeah, just a few, right? I think I was the first though. I think I started that trend. We could check the HR files on that one. So I moved over to EMC in a sales role and I covered New York City law firms in Manhattan for about 4 years. Did pretty well with that. And actually a little claim to fame I have there is I actually sold the first ever VBlock 2 to a customer, and also in the same deal, the first pair of VBlocks ever when they first came out at EMC to a customer who is still a CDI customer to this day. So you guys can, little trivia question some other time, you guys can figure out who that is.
Yep. I think I have an idea.
So we did, did pretty well there. And that's actually where I met Rich Falcone.
Okay.
And working with Rich for, a couple deals. We obviously partnered really well together, worked well together. And I saw, I had a choice in my career. I could say, I could continue working at EMC and sort of, climb the ladder there and work that whole process, which is nothing wrong with that path in life. A lot of people go that path. Or I could, come to CDI, which is obviously a much, much smaller company, especially at the time, and try something a little bit more entrepreneurial, carve my own path and maybe try some things that hadn't been done before. And so I wanted to take the harder path because I thought it would be better for my long-term career.
Sure.
And I was more excited about it. And having come from a smaller company before at SyncSort, I really liked the small company feel as opposed to You know, being at EMC at the time, was, I think it was like a $15 billion company. You know, it was definitely, you know, one of a lot of people, even though I was, you know, highly ranked in the sales organization, still one of a, you know, just a number, I felt like. So came here at the time to start the New York City sales organization with Rich. And, you know, we built up that organization, eventually, you know, kind of changed the way we sell, changed our go-to-market, and changed how we do things. Along in partnership with him, and really recruited what's now known as the New York City sales force, and turned over the New Jersey sales force as well into what is now a different go-to-market strategy. And then around like 2017 is when we, you know, I think when you got here.
Recruited me too.
Yeah. So right around the time
took a while.
You got here.
That's hard to get.
Yep. We were all kind of kicking around Frank, you know, myself, Rich at the time. Yep. You know, a lot of us were kicking around this idea of like, hey, how are we going to adapt and change from a traditional VAR, which we really were at the time, into something a little bit more forward, a little bit, you know, taking advantage of this, you know, cloud trend that was happening at the time and sort of transform the go-to-market of the company. And, you know, Frank and everybody were all together kind of talking about what at the time became known as HCAF, or Hybrid Cloud Automation Framework. And I got a call from a guy who formerly worked at EMC, that I knew from there, who was at ServiceNow. He said, hey, why don't you come to California, come to, we're having our first ever partner Shark Camp, and I think you should come. And I remember standing on my porch and I'm like, I don't want to go to California and spend 4 days out there and learn about tickets. It's not what I want to do. and I'm like, listen, you gotta convince me. Like, why do I do this? And he said to me, well, you don't understand that your customer that you sell storage and networking to leaves a IT, you know, leaves an infrastructure meeting, walks down the hall, goes into another meeting, he talks about IT operations, and then he walks down the hall and he goes into another meeting and he talks about supportability of his customers. And you're only in one of those three meetings. And it'd be your benefit, you'll become more strategic to your customer if you sit in all three meetings. I'm like, all right, it's a pretty good pitch. I'm gonna follow that. So I went out to California, spent a week out there, and honestly, like, sort of changed my thinking about how we approach our customers quite a bit. And I saw an opportunity to really kind of get wider with them, get more strategic with them, based on this concept of like, if I can participate in more conversations with the customer, we can be more relevant to our customer. We can in turn, you know, provide more value to the customer. Sure. We're going to become a better partner to them. So we did that. We, you know, we launched the partnership, and eventually that turned into what's now known as the Digital Transformation Division, which at a certain point we decided to launch the specialty sales force. So I helped launch that. Along with the digital services division. And after running that for a couple of years and looking at how we were having these conversations with our customers, where they're saying to us, hey, I have this problem. I'm trying to digitize this. I'm trying to change this workflow. I want better data on the business about this, that, the other thing. I started thinking about CDI. And I'm like, you know, we still do things very much in a manual way. A lot of spreadsheets, a lot of, you know, paper and things like that.
Yep.
And we could do things a lot better internally if we think about things a little bit differently and kind of take some of our own, you know, advice that we give to our customers about automation and about digitization and workflows, and we bring that in-house and start doing some of that ourselves. And so we started to do that, and that's kind of what led me into the COO role, really.
Yeah.
Was just that. And you know, that's, I guess that's, you know, kind of the origin story.
That's a
long-winded story. Origin story.
Yeah, no, I love it. So at CDI, right, you've been in sales. You've been in service delivery leadership. You have pre-sales that rolls into you today.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of feel like you've done every job, right? You've seen it. You know, sort of all parts of the machine, which I think is probably pretty important when you think about the role that you have now, in terms of optimizing that machine and helping us scale as a company. So if I go back to when you joined CDI, what year was it? 2010?
2010, yeah.
2010. So in 2010, how big was CDI?
I think we were about 75 people, and we were, I think we just crossed $90 million a year in revenue.
So 70, 75 people, $90 million in revenue. Probably looked a lot different back then.
Yeah, I would say.
Right? Like, people are probably like, you're probably like sweeping the floors and, you know, doing
everybody did everything.
Work.
Yeah,
like everybody did everything.
All hands on deck.
So talk to me about some of that growth. You know, today, obviously, we're what, knocking on the door of $1 billion in revenues, over 700 people at this point.
Yeah.
You know, talk to me about some of the things that we've had to do over the years to you know, sort of enable that growth and scale.
Yeah. I mean, a big thing is like separating out roles and responsibilities. And, you know, like I said, when you're a small company, everybody does a little bit of everything.
Yep.
And you have this lot of cross-functional kind of stuff. And then eventually you get to a point where that just doesn't scale. You know, you run out of bandwidth. There's only so many hours in a day for everybody to do things. And
yep.
even if you work 24 hours a day, it's still not enough to do it. And so you have to start to create repeatability and start to create scale. And that part of the first step of that is like separating job functions. And so, you know, the difference between pre and post sales, as an example, there's a reason we don't have people doing both. Because it just doesn't scale. You can't have people delivering and then also writing scopes and going on sales calls and then getting the pressure from the sales team to do that. And then they can't go do quotes. You know, it's just too many things for one person to do. So you've got to kind of separate out those roles and responsibilities. And that's kind of difficult, right? Because, you know, people get passionate about the way they do things. Also, sure. just changing your process just in and of itself is difficult. And so that's really kind of the first thing. And then the second thing is, you know, really the end in mind. Like, what are you really trying to accomplish? What are you trying to do? What's a better outcome? Is there a better way to, you know, to kind of do what you're trying to do? And, put people in the right position to be able to execute those things and give them the tools to be able to do it.
Yeah. How have people sort of responded to that, like, division of responsibilities? Like, it's funny, you mentioned earlier in the conversation, like at a really big company like EMC, and I work there as well. I had some sort of similar experience. You know, you feel like you're like this tiny little cog in a massive wheel. And then the other end of the spectrum, at a 90 million and 75 employee company, you're sort of the inverse of that, where you're
doing everything.
You're doing everything. Like, yeah. You are the wheel, basically.
Yep.
As the company has grown and people have sort of, you know, now we're like in the middle.
In the middle, right? Yeah.
We're like a happy medium. So how have people responded to that sort of division of responsibilities and that type of thing?
I think overall pretty well. I think people like the, not having to feel like all the weight's on their shoulders.
Yep.
There is the, you know, letting go of something also.
Sure.
Like, hey, I used to do that all the time. Now I'm not going to. It's hard to let go of things. So there's an element of that. But I think it's overall people responded pretty well.
Yeah.
And I think it gives, we're one of the things that enables that is giving people the opportunity to lead, right? If you've done two jobs before, or rather than doing two jobs and then saying, I'm just going to do one, can you lead a team of people, enable other people to at least do one of them well? Or can you take your two jobs and lead two people doing those?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how we've grown leadership throughout the organization. And I think that's been a big sort of way that we've maintained the culture as we've scaled. And, you know, I'd like to continue that going forward.
Love that. I love that. What are some of the other changes we've helped made? I mean, obviously we've implemented a lot of different systems as we've grown that are enabling us to continue sort of pouring growth onto the company. What are some of the examples of some of those systems, things that you've seen be successful with customers, that we've applied internally at CDI?
Well, I think the big thing I learned talking to our customers is, it really is all about the data you capture around the work that people are doing. So like Salesforce as example, you know, for years we banged our head. How do I get the sales team to forecast their deals? How do I even get them to put their deals in the system? Right. This is the first thing. Cause like if there's no benefit to them doing that, they're just not going to do it. Right.
Yep.
So you have to enable them to do something that's close to their job. It has to be part of their day-to-day workflow. But if you keep in mind, like, it's all about the data, and then what are the systems people need to work in to get that data and then build the workflows around that. So, you know, certainly what we've done with Salesforce, I think, is very powerful and very advanced at this point and continues to grow. We've done a ton with ServiceNow and how we've totally transformed how our managed services team, you know, manages that. We implemented last year Financial Force as our PSA, and that's been, you know, a tremendous success just in a very short amount of time. We're not even a year on that platform, and we're already seeing big lift and big success out of it, which is great. You know, but we've also done, you know, a lot now we're doing with just the reporting capabilities, because again, it's about the data. So taking the data from those systems and then presenting it back to people in a way that enables them to do their job better. So what we're doing right now around Power BI, I think, is really powerful and going to carry a lot of success as well.
I love the tie back to data and sort of transforming into being, you know, we say all the time as a leadership team, where we want to be a data-driven organization. We want to make decisions based on, you know, data that's available to us. What are some of the challenges with that? I mean, I'm super impressed. You know, you mentioned Power BI and a lot of the systems that we've put in place. I think today we have more data at our fingertips to run our business efficiently than we ever have had before.
Mm-hmm.
Talk me through that. Like, how do you go from how do you go from not having a lot of data to, you know, having all this data at your fingertips and really being truly a data-driven organization?
Yeah. I think it starts with, you have to think about, okay, you want data. Well, what data do you want? You want the data that's going to make the business operate and run better. Or you want the data that's going to enable people to do their jobs better. So if you think about it in that context, what the approach we took really, like if I go back to 2020, when we started to revamp everybody's comp plans, and we put the structure of comp plans in place that enable people to focus on KPIs that make them more productive, that in turn make the business more productive and more successful. So like if you look at what we did with service delivery, the first thing we did was we sat down and said, well, what are the sort of levers that make service delivery tick? Well, obviously utilization matters, or how productive an individual matters. The second thing is how productive is a team, and you know, are they profitable and successful, and are they achieving their team goals? And then the third is the customer successful? And so we track CSAT scores for the customers that they give us feedback on pretty maniacally. We're trending that, and we keep a close eye on that. We track the team success and we track the individual success, and now giving that back to them to say, well, okay, here's now I have visibility to know if I'm productive, if my team's productive, if my customer's successful. And if you kind of carry that all the way up and you look at each layer in the organization, what are those sort of key things that matter? And then you have to go back and say, now that I know what those key things are, how do I capture them? And along the way, trying to capture them, again, in the workflow of how they do their jobs is really the key.
I love it's so interesting that you talked about compensation plans, and sort of understanding what's important to people. How do you measure those people, reward them for the good behavior that hopefully the compensation plan sort of drives. What about like the different layers of that? You mentioned layers, in terms of getting different groups to sort of work together. Like it's one thing if I'm an individual contributor working in a particular department in my team, like I can sort of influence behavior that way. But what about like cross-departmentally? Because I think that's a big factor here in terms of making the whole machine sort of work together.
It's a team game, right? It's a team sport. And so you have to look at it as, you know, any team, like take football, like the Giants, right? We're going to win the Super Bowl this year, right?
No, not
the
Eagles. No. No.
So if you take any team, right? Well, if the offense is really successful, but the defense is not, does the team win? Probably not.
Right.
If the quarterback plays really well, but you know, the line doesn't block, is the team successful? Probably not.
Yep.
And so you have to get like down to the point of the team has, in order for the team to be successful, it's made up of individual contributors, each doing their respective jobs. And in each department's like, okay, the tackle and the guard and the center need to block, but so does the whole line needs to block, right? Yep. And go to their right position. The running back needs to go to the right position in order to make their play. And so each individual department needs to do their respective job well for the other teams to be successful. And what we found is, you know, when one team doesn't, you know, keep up with the other team, it drags down the opposite, right?
Sure.
So, but the way to overcome that isn't necessarily to, you know, ignore that one department might perform better than another in a given month or quarter or whatever. It's actually to say, well, here's what success looks like for your department. Here's what success looks like for your department. And if you both succeed, then the whole team wins.
Right.
And so I think it's great for culture because it gets this whole, like, I want to help you, you want to help me, you know, kind of dynamic going. And then you can find common threads along that everybody's going to get behind. Like, for example, the CSAT one. So we track CSAT. An individual contributor cares about CSAT because it affects his compensation directly. Well, a salesperson isn't paid on a CSAT score, but they know that if a customer's not happy, they're not going to buy more.
Sure.
So what happens if a salesperson calls the, you know, developer or whoever's working on the project and they talk about it? They both have a common goal in mind, right? They both want the same outcome.
Yep.
And so as long as you can make multiple departments care about the same outcome, you're going to get the right behavior and then the right cross-departmental, you know, interaction that you're looking for.
I love that. So we talked about data and, you know, the importance of data-driven decisions. We talked about sort of engineering the machine to work together. Let's talk a little bit about automation. We talk about automation so much with our customers.
So much, yeah.
How has CDI sort of applied automation to the way that you know, we run our company?
The first thing is everybody wants to start with automation.
Yep.
Automation has to come like at the end though, because you can't automate something, a process, if you don't have a process.
Yep.
So a lot of the first things that we've done is, well, let's just get the process down first.
Sure.
How do I want to do it? Because typically when somebody approaches like, I don't like the way this works, I want to streamline and automate it. Well, you want to streamline and automate it because you want to reduce the burden of it.
Sure.
But if you were to automate the current steps, are they even the right steps? And so what we found is oftentimes they're not.
You don't want a garbage in, garbage out type
of
scenario.
Right. Yeah. So what we found is actually first thing is fix the process. And then once you fix the process, you can find steps in the process to automate mm-hmm. and work outwards. Like, I'm a big believer that you have to start with like small achievable chunks. You can't, if you can't take the whole thing all at once.
Yep.
So if there's a 10-step process and you can change the process and make it a 7-step process, well, you've made it more efficient without doing anything. And then if you can automate steps 3 and 4 in the process, now you're better off, right? And now you've cut it down in half just by taking, just that approach. And I think that kind of carries forward, and you can do that, across the entire organization, true for any process. And then the next piece is, okay, now that you've decided you want to automate, you have the process down, how are you going to do it? And you have to map that process out. It has to be a well-understood process, and then you got to have the right tools to do it.
I love that. And certainly we've seen that on the customer side as well, right? It's super important, which is why, we incorporate things like business analysts and things into, engineering the right process, automate second.
Well, and what I found is, like, if you talk about we learn a lot from our customers, but yep. I think we're at a point now where our business is actually far more complex than most of our customers.
Yep.
I mean, if you think about what we do, we have hundreds of partners at this point. I forget the exact number of items in our service catalog, but it's in the thousands,
yeah.
right? We have tons of things in our service catalog, lots of different products that we sell, different pricing strategies from all of them, different invoicing cadences for all the different contract types. Our business is actually fairly complex when you look at
sure.
it like operationally, more so than a lot of our customers. And at our size and scale, we're running a multi-petabyte data center. We've got thousands of virtual machines that we have to keep up. We've got security and compliance issues that we've got to deal with for that part of the business. There's a lot there. And so we're at a point now where I feel like we're dealing with more complex problems than a lot of our customers are. And we're in a great position to be able to go back and give advice based on what we've learned in our journey along the way.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Let's talk about some of the challenges. So, you've implemented new CRM, new PSA, new service management tools, new monitoring tools. With all that change, what were some of the hardest things about a lot of the transformation that you've sort of helped deliver?
Hardest things.
Biggest challenges.
I think the first is, when you start down a path that is transformational, it seems hard, and it is hard, right? And so you're going to be met with a lot of, I don't want to say naysayers, but maybe people who think the journey might be too difficult. Like, it's just too hard to get there. And is it actually going to be worth it when you actually do it? Because it might take years to get there.
Yep.
So if I look at the journey we've been on in the last, just say, 3 years, we've done so much in the last 3 years, but it's been 3 years, right? Yeah. In that journey, right?
Right.
And so, and I would say we're probably not even done with all the improvements that we'd like to make. And I could probably sit down and write down for you, another 3 years of things I'd like to do.
Sure.
And then you're talking about 6-year journey, right? But you can't think about it that way. So right. Because I think people's minds can't wrap their head around 3-6 years, like who knows what's going to happen that far out in advance.
Sure.
You can't view that far out. So I think having goals and objectives that maybe take you out that far, but then break that down into shorter periods of time.
What kind of time horizon are you?
I think in general, like my rule. So I, at the beginning of every year, like I write down everything I want to accomplish, and you've seen some of these documents. Yeah. It might be 7-10 pages worth of, like, literally just written brain dump on a page, all the things I want to, do in this particular year. And then I come back at the end of the year and I review, and obviously along the way, but at the end of the year, I review, well, did we get them all done? And then if not, what carries over the next year? What do we throw out? And what Yep. got added to the list along the way? And so when I look at that list and then after I get it all down the page and I'm going to prioritize, okay, what are we actually going to do? I look at it and say, if I can't get some value out of this in 6 months, it's probably too hard. I got to break it down into a more consumable, chunk. And really I'm looking for things in like, can I get value in 2 to 3 month timeframes where every couple months, every quarter, we're getting something out of it. It might not be the end result I want, but does it get me closer to the end result? Because then you're starting to get incremental value out of it. And then you build the momentum behind people who maybe aren't ready to buy into the long-term vision.
Sure.
Because now they're starting to see that it come to life along the way gradually in real time.
Yeah.
And I think that helps a lot.
Yeah, I mean, when you break it down, you start to build momentum, get some success, you start getting wins. Now you have believers behind you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of starts to, like the snowball effect almost.
That's right.
Love that. What advice would you give, another COO or somebody who's trying to enact change within their growing organization to enable scale and growth?
I mean, it sounds like very cliche, but like start with the end in mind.
Yeah.
Right. What do you want to accomplish?
Yeah.
And what are you trying to achieve? So, you know, if your problem is like you want to drive operational excellence or operational efficiency through the organization, that's great, but then you have to define what that means. And then you have to put that in context of where you are now. So, you know, the ultimate, like we do this like operational maturity assessment every year.
Yep.
And so we've trended from a 2.6 to a 4.0 in the last like 30 months, which is on a 5-point scale, which is really good. Like that's a tremendous, you know, improvement,
sure.
But we didn't set out to be a 4.0 first.
Right.
From a 2.6, the first goal was, well, can I get over 3?
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so I think you have to look at like, what does it mean to get there? How are you going to measure your success? And then can you break it down into like real goals that you can achieve in a realistic time frame?
Yeah, I like the, you know, having realistic goals, I think, is important, right? You're never going to go from a 2 to a 5,
right?
You know, incremental progress along the way, I think, is important. And of course, back to the data-driven thing, what gets measured can get improved.
That's right.
Yeah. Last thing here, on our website, you have this quote, and I want to ask you about it. I think the question, you go to our leadership page, the question was, what advice would you give somebody who wants to come work at CDI? And your answer, which I loved, and I'd like to hear from you about it, was be humble, learn every day, work hard, and have fun. Tell me a little bit more about that.
I think we put that site up a couple of years ago. I just don't even remember that quote, but it's like
it's a good one.
It is a good one. I like it. I'm gonna bring it back.
Write it down.
It's honestly like I think when I was asked the question, I just answered sort of off the cuff of how I sort of approach every day, and that is really how I approach. Like, you know, try to stay humble, work hard, learn something new every day, and have fun. It's like if you do those four things, again, keep it simple, right? If you do those four things, you're probably having a good day.
Good,
you're probably going to be, you know, all the good things will fall into place. And so that's generally how I approach it. And I think anybody who does is, you know, probably destined for success, especially here in this organization. And I can't stress enough, like the humble part, like we all learn from each other, and like no person in the organization is, you know, too good to hear from another person. We, you know, we have the open door policy that Rich always talks about, right?
Yep.
We want to hear from everybody because I don't know what ideas I haven't thought of yet, right? If I had every idea in the world, then like maybe I wouldn't be sitting here. I don't know.
Right.
But, you know, we want to hear from all the people who have ideas and, you know, bring them forth and be willing to listen to everybody around you. I think it's important. And even if you have ideas, like it might not be right. You know, you might maybe I bounce the idea off you and you give me another perspective on it I haven't thought of. And as long as I want to learn from that, you know, and have fun doing it, I think you'll probably get good places.
Love that. Love that. Well, Vince, hey, this was a lot of fun. It's always fun to talk to you. I always learn a lot when we chat.
Yeah.
Come back, see us again.
I will.
Maybe we'll talk some more about more progress that we've made as we continue to grow.
Maybe on the next one, we'll talk about the four times we tried to recruit you on the team. We'll leave a little teaser for that one in the next conversation.
I love it. Well, hey, thanks for your time today. Yeah. And thank you all for listening. We'll catch you on the next episode of the CDI CTO podcast.
Thanks, everybody.
The CDI CTO podcast is brought to you by CDI, hosted by Will Huber and produced by Alyssa Hall and Spencer Grogan. To learn more about CDI, you can visit CDILLC.com. The CDI CTO podcast is a production of CDI Studios.